Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. How you doing? Did you make it through the weekend? We had violent, vicious, horrible storms here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains and got to remember what it's like to have no air conditioning, no power, a trickle of water, and almost triple-digit heat. Just like the good old days, huh? What are we going to do when that happens to all of us and not because of the weather? Ah! Anyway, welcome to the program. Hope you had a good weekend. We have several items. John McCain, once again, demonstrating the fact that he is unable to... It's not that he's a liar. It's just that he is pre-senile. This guy can't remember facts about his own political career. We'll show you a little bit of that. Also, a moment with Bob from Bob Alexander tonight. But we're going to start the program. We're going to start the program tonight with Gary Gordon, who is a Los Angeles County. He's a member of the Los Angeles County Central Committee of the Peace and Freedom Party. And he was a delegate this past weekend in Sacramento, California at that party's convention, where Ralph Nader was selected as the Peace and Freedom Party's presidential candidate for 2008. Those of you who are long-time listeners to this program know I waffle back and forth all the time, and if I had the sense God gave of sack of doorknobs, I would just stop the nonsense and vote for the man who helped create regulatory agencies, who helped get laws passed, including the Occupational Safety and Health Administration laws, the Environmental Protection Agency, Consumer Product Safety Commission, Safe Drinking Water, Freedom of Information. It just goes on and on. Gary Gordon's joining us now from, I guess you're in L.A., right, Gary?
Yeah, I'm back in L.A. now.
Gary was a delegate to this convention. I missed all the coverage that the major networks and the cable networks provided for this convention, so maybe you can fill us in what happened.
Well, you missed it because it mostly wasn't there. What people can find today is a pretty short Associated Press story that came out. It's about a 5 or 6 graph story. Other than that, it's really too bad. Friday night, the four candidates, Brian Moore, who is the Socialist Party candidate running in various states around the country, Cynthia McKinney, who has the Green Party nomination in California, Ralph Nader, and Gloria LaRiva from the Party of Socialism and Liberation, all four of them spent 3 hours in a very, very precise debate over numerous issues. It was ideal for anyone who cares about the country and the issues. And
let me guess, Gary, Tom Brokaw was not asking the questions.
Tom Brokaw and other members of his greatest generation didn't seem to be involved. Uh-huh. There was some video there, and we're trying to track down who it was, and because that evening itself, that was before the convention started, would make a great documentary just in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Cynthia talked a little bit about the regressive nature of politics in Georgia, so I spoke with her about that a little bit afterwards. But all of them were just really just dead on so many of the issues and thorough, and it became a question of just what's the best way to go to get it done so that we can create a country that gets rid of this corporate dominance and gets rid of this permanent war economy.
I know that part of Nader's platform, I don't know why I'm hesitating there, it's just my stuttering, a part of Nader's platform is to, first of all, return corporations to their original status of being nothing but paper constructs, take away their personhood, and also to get the money, corporate money, all money, if possible, out of politics. So was that debated at all?
Well, I think everyone, you know, first of all, the Peace and Freedom Party is a socialist, feminist party. So right away, there's pretty much a get rid of the corporations bottom line. And Nader, of course, mentioned what he has mentioned for 35 years, and other people have brought up, and what he's done a lot about, which is that corporations should not essentially have constitutional rights, which they have. They have the rights of people, even though they're not people. If there was any real debate in terms of differences at times, It was whether or not Ralph was radical enough. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about your hesitancy to go ahead and vote for him, and people get pulled back into the Democratic Party because, in my opinion, and the opinion of many of us who are there, they get hypnotized or scared once again that if they don't support the Democrats, it'll be worse under the Republicans. You know, for a lot of people there, the question was, we need to be strong, we need to be as strong as we can be, and ultimately Ralph got the nomination. He came in with 46 votes, and Gloria LaRiva came in second with 27, and Brian Moore and Cynthia McKinney split the mm-hmm. remainder of the 89 votes that were cast.
Is the Peace and Freedom Party on the ballot in California?
Yeah, it's a ballot access party, which is what made the nomination valuable. This is, I'm told by the veterans that this was one of the most exciting conventions that's happened in a long time mm-hmm. Because of the interest and because there's so much fury in the state. I mean, look, we have an idiot governor who, I don't know if you've seen this, is trying to eliminate state jobs. He's,
right.
he's issued an executive order firing people. He's trying to reduce people's pay from to the federal minimum wage, which for many of them would mean going down from $2,000 a month to $600 a month in earned income.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a tremendous amount of rage, and we're hopeful that both the rage that exists and the optimism for a future that can be made without corporate power and without this as I said, I'm using Marvin Harris's phrase now, the permanent war economy,
mm-hmm.
is that can be eliminated and we can get on the track. The way I look at it is if most of the things that, and you mentioned a couple of them, that Nader has suggested and worked on over the years, if they had been implemented, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in when it comes to whether it's mortgages or a war economy.
That's true. Yeah.
Anything that you can mention, if the man had been listened to and supported along the way, and of course I think we all know that there was a lot of positive action on a lot of his work until Reagan got elected.
Yeah.
And then between Reagan and Bush and Clinton and Bush, it's all gone backwards.
How many states will we find you may not know this, just to best guess, will we find these candidates that are not Democrat, not Republican?
Well, the Nader campaign, this is one of the attractive things about Nader and supporting Nader. They're shooting to be on the ballot in 45 states, and from what I understand, California made 23, and they're trying to make it 30 by the end of August, with the remainder by the end of September. He's going to be running on a variety of ballot lines throughout the country. California, the Peace and Freedom Party of California is only in California.
Right.
Although Ralph's people are working on setting up Peace and Freedom ballot lines in Iowa, in Utah, someone mentioned Nebraska also. In other places, he may be running as an independent, but these are all ballot lines that he's going to be on and not as a write-in. And if we can get a genuine anti-war, anti-corporate candidate on the ballot in 45 states, that's historic. I don't know that that's ever been done, but if it has, it hasn't been for a long, long time.
All right, Gary, I've got a break coming up here. What I want to ask you when we come back is the question I'm sure you've heard a million times. You and I have debated it. By the way, full disclosure, Gary Gordon and I have known each other for about 30 years. But you and I have discussed this many times, and it raises its ugly head again. And that is, how can a third, fourth, fifth, sixth party, how can a minor party that right now is on the ballot in one state have any influence whatsoever on the drift or the headlong rush that this country now finds it in? So let me put you on hold. We'll come back and pick it up after the break. We're talking with Gary Gordon, who is a delegate to the California Peace and Freedom Party convention over the weekend. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
faster than a flying monkey, more powerful than a special prosecutor. It's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
Don't want no secret agent. 21 past the hour, we're talking to Gary Gordon from L.A., who was he's the L.A. County Central Committee member for the Peace and Freedom, California Peace and Freedom Party. He was a delegate this past weekend at that party's political convention in Sacramento, where Ralph Nader secured that party's nomination to run for president. How, Gary, does the Peace and Freedom Party exert any influence whatsoever?
Well, I think the Peace and Freedom Party and any vote for a anti-war, anti-corporate candidate exerts influence by saying specifically, unequivocally, there is a choice. There is a clear choice. If you look at the VoteNader.org website and his breakdown of his positions, Obama's and McCain's positions,
mm-hmm.
for Obama and McCain, adopting single-payer national health insurance isn't even on the table.
Right.
Being against nuclear power isn't even on the table. Adopting a carbon pollution tax isn't on the table. Opening the presidential debates isn't on the table. And on and on and on. You know, one of the best things that was said at this convention, one of the people, in referring to Gloria LaRiva and Ralph Nader, said, "Since when do we get to choose between the greater of two goods and not the lesser of two evils?"
Mm.
Now, that's a spirit that needs to be embraced and spread throughout the country. Peace and Freedom Party, other independent groups, anti-war groups, anti-corporate groups who want to proceed through the electoral process, that's the kind of spirit that's necessary. We need to begin voting with our conscience and who we're for so that we can get the kind of country that we want. And this is a signal that there are people willing to move in that direction.
Regarding the Peace and Freedom Party itself, and again, I understand this is a California entity. Your website is what?
Well, the state website is, spelling it out, Peace and Freedom, with the word "and" spelled out, peaceandfreedom.org. And then individual counties and chapters have their own websites. The platform of the Peace and Freedom Party is probably found easiest on the state website, along with other information. And then, like I say, this is within this effort to support Nader, we're looking to establish Peace and Freedom Party, the Peace and Freedom Party on the ballot in other states. When the party was originally created in 67, 68, there were several states that got it on the ballot line. I think it was easier to do back then, and there actually was a national convention, I think, in Michigan. But that's sort of back in the day, and now we're where we're at now.
So there is, for people who might be a little bit confused about this, there is definitely a difference between peaceandfreedom.org and Nader.org.
Well, in that Nader is trying to run as Ralph Nader and his running mate, by the way, Matthew Gonzalez, who used to be on the Board of County Commissioners, or Board of Supervisors, I think it's called, in San Francisco, and passed a lot of critical progressive legislation there. Very dynamic guy.
Mm-hmm.
Their organization has been working to get on the ballot. And the easiest way for them to get on the ballot in California was to approach the Peace and Freedom Party.
Right.
In other states, they're taking whatever routes they can, including setting up Peace and Freedom Party organizations to get ballot lines in those states. In whatever state you're in, probably the easiest thing to do is start out by going to the VoteNader.org website, seeing if there's some Nader organizing going on in your state.
Mm-hmm.
But take a look at the PeaceAndFreedom.org website, because whether you do this before, during, or after the election, you may want to start a Peace and Freedom Party in your county, in your state, and help build it, as we want to do, back into a national party.
We're just about out of time, but let me ask you, last question here. We've got about a minute, Gary. How much time do we have left in this country before we really, really, and we're 95% there, I understand, but we're really sucked into this corporatist mode. You can call it corporatist or fascist. It really doesn't matter anymore. How much time do you think we have left?
You know, I don't know. Is the Mayan calendar right? I don't know.
well, if it is, we don't have to worry about anything.
Right. We have to do what we have to do with our ability and our conscience, and it may be to proceed electorally, and it may be to go beyond that at some point. It's just tough to say. I mean, we're definitely we're in trouble. There's no doubt about it. Like I say, if Nader's ideas, whether it was him or not, if his ideas and suggestions had been taken and implemented over the years, we would not be in the mess we're in. We still have that opportunity. Whether we can turn it around, what are we going to do? Go silently into that good night or make some noise and try and do something about it?
I opt for the latter, as you could imagine. Gary,
yeah.
Good to hear from you, pal.
Good talking with you, Mike.
All right, take care. We'll talk again. Gary Gordon, who is L.A. County Central Committee member of the Peace and Freedom Party. You can check him out, peaceandfreedom.org or nader.org. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M. Five before the hour. So, Ralph Nader, Peace and Freedom Party, the Green Party. You know, I've gotten a spate of emails, as I always do, when I either bring up or allow someone else to bring up or ask someone else to bring up the candidacy of Ralph Nader. And the emails pretty much run along the same lines. It's hopeless. It's futile. It would have worked 30 years ago if we would have been paying attention, but nobody was. And a vote for Nader now is a vote for fascism. And this is where I always get reduced to this terrible ennui. Is that the right word? This feeling of despair and hopelessness. I just want to sit down and stare out at the woods behind my house and forget about it, forget about all of it. You know, I go to Peace and Freedom website or Nader.org website, and I look at the position on the issues that the so-called fringe candidates have. And they're exactly my position. Exactly. No daylight between the positions on the key issues at Nader.org and Mike Molloy in his head. No daylight at all. And I'm pretty sure that Nader will be on the ballot here in Georgia on Election Day. And I'm sure that most liberals, most Democrats, you don't even have to be a liberal. You can just be a Democrat. If you go to Nader.org and read the points of view, read his position on the issues, you sit there and say, yeah, right, okay, yeah, that's fine, agree. And yet, come Election Day, you will not vote for Nader. And that strikes me as just, you talk about cognitive dissonance, is that it? To be able to hold two separate ideas in your brain at the same time, you know a vote for the corporate Democrat or the corporate Republican hurries up the fate of this country. You also know that a vote, if enough people voted, their conscience, as Gary said, or as many people have said, voted the conscience or their clear and certain knowledge of what would be right for this country, what this country needs, we would not have to put up with a corporate Democrat or a corporate Republican. But somehow we're able to entertain in our heads at the same time the idea I should vote for that candidate, in this case it would be Nader, but I can't, I'm going to vote for that candidate, in this case it would probably be Obama, even though I understand that Obama does not have the position that Nader does. And the positions that Nader have are the positions I agree with. But I'm going to be self-defeating, and I'm going to vote for Obama. This is where I start to, you know, my engine starts to go off the rails. Why do we do that? Does anybody know? And you know, for the umpteenth time, please don't anyone send me an email about, but Mike, the Supreme Court, if we don't vote for Obama, McCain will put conservatives on the Supreme Court and we're doomed. Democrats put conservatives on the Supreme Court. We've gone all through this, Truth Seeker, so let's not go through it again. All right? And the reason Democrats put conservatives on the Supreme Court is because the Democrats are as involved in a co-conspiratorial sort of way as Republicans in destroying this country. Destroying it in the sense of what it was intended, not what it was at the beginning, but what it was intended to be over the course of what the framers saw as the future, I would assume. And our generation is going to sit here and watch it end. And we've all got good excuses. But I just, you know, this is where it becomes extremely weird for me. And maybe for you. Maybe that's why you don't allow yourself to think about it a whole lot. Ralph Nader represents everything that we need, and he's been representing it. Granted, I've said before, I busted his chops before because he has not put together a viable third party. He is submerged during most of the year until every 4 years an election cycle reappears. On the other hand, maybe he is submerged because major mass media holds his head underwater. It's a form of media waterboarding for Ralph Nader for 4 years. And then he breaks through, you know, gasps for air, and then gets submerged again. But I think, you know, as Gary Gordon pointed out, if you look back at what Ralph Nader has advocated over the past 40 years, 50 years, has it been 50? Has it been that long? Just about 50 years. And what the organizations that he inspired or literally suggested legislation for the American people, if you take a look at the overall picture, nobody, not a single, you cannot tell me another person in this country in a political sense who has done more for Americans than Ralph Nader. You simply can't do it. And Nader has never held elective office. But we're not going to vote for him, are we? We're just not going to do it. What is that? What is that? We're going to vote for the candidate. I've gotten a lot of emails lately from people say, well, Mike, we have to go with Barack Obama because, and it's usually the Supreme Court or war or McCain is senile or what have you. We've got to go with Barack Obama, and once we get him in office, we can apply pressure. Now, I had a caller last week suggest that, and trying to be as respectful as Malloy as possible being, I wanted to know, how do you apply pressure to President Obama? How do you do that? How do you apply pressure to candidate Obama? Well, the quick answer for both questions is you do not. Thinking such a thing is madness, illusion, insanity, makes no sense. You've got your head way, 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 way up your rear end if you think that pressure can be applied to a President Obama by you, by me, by 1,000 of us, by 10,000 of us, by 100,000 of us, by 500,000 of us, by 1,000,000 of us, by 10 million of us. You can't be serious. You have been alive for a long time now, relatively speaking, you have seen what it is that makes the political system in this country respond. And in this past 45 years, you have come to the horrible realization that what makes it respond is money. Who has all the money? Corporate America. What have they done with it? They have made the political system responsive to them. So, you know, Gary alluded to, you know, and I said, well, what? How much time do we have left? If you go by the Mayan calendar, about 4 years. But if you don't go by that calendar, then there's a lot of, well, it depends in there, okay? There's always the option of means other than electoral. Now, you know what that means, and I know what that means, and nobody wants that. We can't. I mean, unless there's an attempt by the right wing in this country to really, you know, just clamp down. And I don't care who the right wing is, Democrat, Republican, it makes no difference whatsoever. To clamp down on what remaining illusions of freedom still are out there. You know, the time may come when people say, no, you've pushed me too far, and now I'm going to start shooting. I hope it never comes to that. When we've had those kinds of internecine conflicts, either us or other countries, you know what results from that. It's horrifying. But we're not going to vote for Nader this November, are we? Even though, there it is. You look at the website, every single thing that makes absolute sense to rescue not just this country, but to be in the vanguard of rescuing the globe. Everybody. There it is, right there. It's not Obama speak. It's not McCain speak. It's not Democrats or Republicans or all these crazed people who now have us totally, they think, under their control. And politically, they do. They really do. Politically, you and I have as much freedom of choice as, make your own analogy. The freedom of choice is gone. You know it as well as I do. You know it as well as I do. So what do we do? Probably nothing, right? And, this is not going to turn into a Mike Spanx's audience session tonight. Or Mike Spanx himself. No, not going to do that. But I can't get past that question. Why? When Ralph Nader offers exactly what this country needs and what all liberals and most Democrats should want and Republicans, we're not going to vote for him.
Mike Malloy, do it for you on Nova M Radio.
It's about 10 before the hour. Yeah, a lot of emails on the Nader candidacy. He was nominated by the Peace and Freedom Party in California over the weekend. And has his own website, RalphNader.org, peaceandfreedom.org. But the emails from liberal listeners, and I know you're liberal listeners because I know what you usually write about, are pretty much all the same. You know, I'm not being, trust me, I'm not being critical. I'm not saying, oh, you're a bunch of jackass. You know, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying they're pretty much the same. Here's a couple of quick examples. This is from Cassio. in Peoria, Arizona, which Cassia writes, yeah, the home of McCain. Peoria, Arizona? Oh, my God. Mike, I was listening in on your take regarding Ralph Nader and your dilemma, or America's dilemma, on who to vote for, the corporate candidate versus the idealistic. While I might not be able to serve up a worthwhile answer, here's something to consider. While you may agree with Nader's position, remember that our government, pre-George Bush, is a three-branch government. So while you may agree with Nader, even if you put him in office, his positions would most likely never become law. Your enthusiasm for Nader should make you push for more local politicians and House members with his positions. Even the mundane Democratic positions will have a hard time passing with all the blue dog Democrats running around. So I hope this helps. Cassio. How is this supposed to help? But I get your point. This is Stark from Sacramento who writes, Mike, as much as I may support the principles of the Peace and Freedom Party or other so-called third parties over the two major parties, I cannot waste my vote on any third-party candidate. Yes, I think there isn't much difference between the Democrats and the Republicans in many of their motivations, but it's still more important to let the majors know that they will get voted out of office with regularity than to waste my vote on candidates who never have a, quote, prayer, end quote, of winning their office. The Democrats and Republicans have a guaranteed large percentage of the electorate in their camp every election. Until Ralph Nader is out there working all year, every year, to build a party base where enough voter mass can be perceived as being developed to actually compete with the major parties, to actually have a chance to elect a candidate for major office, I can't waste my vote on candidates who just flare up for a few weeks every 4 years. Some so-called third party needs a famous figure like Ralph Nader to provide the cornerstone in building a real competitive third party with real chance, with a real chance, by being in the press and being competitive constantly, even between elections. I'll not vote with a bloc which has no chance of winning. Stark in Sacramento. Yeah, I know. That's the standard response. It's been my response. And again, don't misunderstand. I hope I made it very clear. I'm not setting myself in some position where, some sanctimonious position of how can you dumbasses vote for Barack Obama, vote for Nader? No, I'm not doing that at all. This whole thing is about us. It's about you and it's about me. I don't know what to do either. I know what I've done in the past. I've gone ahead and voted for the corporate Democrat. I've done it over and over and over and over. And not just on a national level. We have Democrats running here in Georgia for the House. As a matter of fact, there's a runoff tomorrow in my district between two candidates, both of whom I kind of know. I know the one on a sit-down and talk basis. The other one I just know because I've lived in the county that he's been CEO of for the past, what's it been, Kathy, 4 years? So, but neither one of them. Neither one of these Democrats, and they call themselves Democrats, although one calls himself a Reagan Democrat, so there you go with that one. Goodbye. But even the other one, the guy who I like, is, when I look at his positions on issues on his website, there's really nothing there for me. Nothing. As a liberal, as someone who is drifting more toward the idea of socialism for certain key industries in this country, as a means of not just pulling us back from the brink of fascism, but as a means of kind of establishing what this country promised at the very beginning, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And it wasn't promised to everybody, but that's changed over the years. So let's, you know, here we are. So I, the reason I bring it up is because it is a massive struggle with me. I will not know, I don't think, this year until I walk into the touch screen voting booth at my voting precinct a church over here on a road not far from our house. That's where I'll go. And when I walk in there, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what I'm going to do. It'll be very clear. I'll have a very clear choice. I really will. There will probably be four candidates for president on my ballot. Cynthia McKinney for the Green Party. Ralph Nader for whatever party he appears on the Georgia ballot. Barack Obama, the Democrat, and John McCain, the Republican. All right, when we come back, we're going to move on. I appreciate you're hanging with me on this because I know a lot of people are just tired. Oh, God, he's not going to talk about Nader again. Oh, Malloy, stop! Well, I'm glad you're so clear on that issue, but I'm not. I just am not. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. This is Nova M Radio. Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour here on the Malloy program on the Nova M Radio Network. Over the weekend, was it the weekend or was it last Friday? I guess it was last Friday. NASA scientists, I guess it was Thursday, announced that the Phoenix lander, the latest Mars space probe that is busy at work up there, had confirmed that, yes, there is water on Mars after analysis of a soil sample from the planet's surface. Now, right away, I remember the first thing that occurred to me, wait, haven't I heard about that a million times? No, what we'd heard about was expanding and contracting ice fields at the two polar regions of the of Mars. But this is actual water. According to William Boynton, University of Arizona, who is the lead scientist for the lander's so-called oven. It's a little thermal and evolved gas analyzer so that they can, you know, they can break down and take a look at the substances from a chemical standpoint. According to him, quote, we've seen evidence for this water ice before in observation by the Mars Odyssey orbiter and in disappearing chunks observed by Phoenix last month, but this is the first time Martian water has been touched and, quote, tasted, end quote. Now, to put it in context, the lander, the Phoenix, started digging trenches into Martian soil after touching down on May 25th, and it revealed a white substance that scientists confirmed was ice. So, University of Arizona scientist Peter Smith, who is the Phoenix's principal investigator, said ice scooped up by Phoenix's robotic digging arm was being analyzed to see if conditions on Mars could have supported life. And he said, quote, we're looking to understand the history of the ice by trying to figure out if this ice has ever melted and through melting has created a liquid environment that modifies soil. He went on to say, we're just getting the data back. Through this, we also hope to resolve questions. Is this a habitable zone on Mars, meaning that if we have periodic liquid water, then materials that are basic ingredients for life forms would be there too. Important nutrients, according to Professor Smith, important nutrients have been found, including sodium, potassium, magnesium, And so far, no organic materials have been found. This is as of last Thursday. Now, that's according to the experts. But if organic materials or any form of the elemental building blocks of life are found, because then the entire book of Genesis, the holy text for three psychopathic religions, is wiped out. Boom. Now, I know there are some televangelists who would argue with that and say, well, you just don't understand. Okay. But Genesis, the book of Genesis is then wiped out. If Genesis is wiped out, then everything else is gone too. Boom. Then what? Then what?
Well,
John McCain lies about his support for MLK Junior Day in Arizona. Have you heard this yet? Now, we played part of this for you last week. This is where McCain, first of all, he was asked a question by a reporter. And as is the case with George Bush, when it's a two-part question, Bush, because his brain is coked out, and McCain, because his brain is just, I don't know, the synapses are blown or all that webbing has begun or whatever the hell you call it. But McCain stumbled around, asked the reporter to repeat the question. She did. But then he added something that we did not have for you last week, and we want you to hear the entire question now. And he was asked about his, have you got, is the question on the tape, on the tape? Is the question on the digital sound recording? Okay, let's play the whole thing.
Senator, can you explain why you and your campaign manager have specifically said that Obama played the race card with his comments the other day?
Sure.
And can you elaborate when you said that you fought for equal...
Oops, here we go. Wait a minute.
Focusing on improving the lives of African Americans?
All right.
Rights for your entire life, what specifically you've done focusing on improving the lives of African Americans?
All right. Well, first of all...
this is sad.
The first question that you said, why am I...
This is sad.
When your campaign manager and you reiterated that you backed Davis
think,
in saying he
his,
played the race card.
Because
can you
I think his comments were clearly the race card because of what he said. Everybody can read his remarks, and in fact, his campaign retracted those remarks. So I think it's very clear, and I was very disappointed. I was very disappointed at his comments. And so his campaign retracted those remarks, so... Let's move on. I've supported legislation time after time that would provide equal opportunities for all Americans. I have supported lower taxes. I've supported increases in educational benefits. I have supported hundreds of pieces of legislation which would help Americans obtain an equal opportunity in America. I'm proud of that record.
Uh-oh.
I'm fighting for the recognition of Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday in my state,
for
sponsoring specific legislation that would prevent discrimination in any shape or form in America today, and I'm proud of that fight. And I'd be glad to give you the legislative record of my efforts.
You're going to burn in hell, boy! Your head is going to continue to get full of them cancers until it falls off if you don't stop. What do you mean? You fought for the recognition of the King holiday in Arizona. Oh, my God! ABC News reported, quote, in Arizona, a bill to recognize a holiday honoring MLK failed in the legislature, so then Governor Bruce Babbitt, a Democrat, declared one through executive order. In January 1987, the first act of Arizona's new governor, Republican Evan Meacham, was to rescind the executive order by his predecessor to create an MLK holiday. Arizona's stance became a national controversy. McCain backed the decision to rescind the holiday at the time. Fact. McCain supported Governor Evan Meacham's decision in 1987 to rescind Martin Luther King Jr. Day, as reported by the Philadelphia Inquirer, quote, in a vote likely to haunt him for the rest of his public career, McCain voted against 1983 legislation establishing the third Monday in January as the federal holiday marking King's birthday. Back home in Arizona, he supported Governor Evan Meacham's decision in 1987 to rescind an executive order creating a state holiday for King, but later reversed his position. Fact. That's from the Philadelphia Inquirer, June 16th, 08. The first one is ABC News, April 3rd, 08. Now, this is from August 2nd, 83, and it says... Fact, McCain voted against creating Martin Luther King holiday. In 1983, McCain voted against a motion to suspend the rules and pass a bill to designate the third Monday of every January as a federal holiday in honor of the late civil rights leader, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. How do you do this? McCain in the past has tried to say, well, youthful ignorance. He was 48 years old when he voted against the King holiday. 48. Son of a bitch. It's astonishing. He stands right there. Can you play that last part, Kathy? Just the part towards the end, because this is, you've got to remember. Go ahead.
In any shape or form in America today, and I'm proud of that fight. I'd be glad to.
No, I think you have to go back a little bit.
Sponsoring specific legislation that would prevent discrimination.
No, back there. There you go. Right back
fighting
there.
Fighting for the recognition of Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday in my state.
Oh, yeah, that's enough.
Sponsoring.
You know, how can he stand? His wife's standing there. Governor Charlie Crist of Florida standing there when he tells this filthy-ass lie. It's just astonishing to me. Isn't it to you, huh? You astonished?
I voted for Dr. King.
No, you didn't. We'll be right back.
Your Day Screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
21 past the hour regarding water or any sort of elemental life being discovered on Mars. That's the end of Genesis. Prairie 2 writes, the book of Genesis was wiped out by the first moon landing when it was proven conclusively that the moon doesn't give off any light, as the book of Genesis clearly states. Fundamentalists still don't accept that as true, hence the fake moon landing conspiracy theory. That's right, I completely forgot about that one. Yeah. Oh, my God. From thinkprogress.org, Dick Cheney's argument for releasing innocent detainees a couple of years ago when the torture thing was in full swing and... all sorts of bad things are being committed against innocent people. The Cheney's argument for not releasing them was, quote, they'll all get lawyers, end quote. Alan Brinkley, in his New York Times review of Jane Mayer's new book, The Dark Side, Alan Brinkley describes how by the end of 2005, torture advocates, Jesus, God, oh, that gives me, it still gives me just icy fingers, up and down the spine. Torture advocates within the Bush administration were fighting to continue their program, quote, because they feared being prosecuted should the program be halted and exposed, end quote. In one White House meeting described by Jane Mayer, Vice President Dick Cheney argued against releasing innocent detainees because, well, this is what he said. People will ask where they've been and, you know, what have you been doing with them? And they'll all get lawyers. Jesus Christ. And you people are telling me, no, I don't want to get into that. I don't want to get into a pissing contest with anybody tonight. Like I said, I've gotten 20 emails from people who are essentially telling me I'm crazier than a loon if I advocate a vote for Nader. So, you know, just do whatever you do. But as far as a wasted vote, are you kidding? As far as, never mind. You know, come election day, I hope you go to the polls and vote. But if you don't, I mean, that'll make sense to me, too. All of it makes sense because none of it makes sense, right? When everybody says, well, I'm guilty, I take responsibility, then nobody's guilty. Hey, Mike, good news. Consumer spending was up 0.6% in June. The numbers came out today. The bad news is that is less than the 0.8%, which is now the rate of inflation. And that's with the stimulus checks everybody spent. And, of course, the official inflation rate is only about half what it really is. Businesses are reporting to the government that they have scheduled layoffs totaling 560,000 jobs. Most of these people don't know yet that they will be getting the axe. When it's hot in the summer, you can hear the corn grow. This summer, that rumble you can hear in the distance isn't a train or an F5 tornado coming. It's the economy collapsing. From one of our frequent emailers, did you read Krugman's column today in the New York Times about the slow motion meltdown? Interesting. All right, have you had enough time now to digest the initial shock of finding out that the anthrax guy committed suicide? Have you had enough time now to digest all that and realize that, once again, it's a scam, it's a trick, it's a lie, it's deceit? I know, I can hear the amen chorus already saying, oh, Christ, he's coming up with another conspiracy theory. Oh, there goes Malloy, the tinfoil hat. Oh, my God, why do I listen to this guy? I don't know, sir. I have no idea why you listen to this program. I really don't. But it's BS, and you know it, and I know it. Not only that, but according to the New York Daily News on Saturday, in the immediate aftermath of those anthrax attacks, White House officials repeatedly insisted that FBI Director Robert Mueller prove that it was a second wave assault by Al-Qaeda. They insisted. God damn it, Robert, you get out there and you prove it was those dirty Al-Qaedas over there in Iraq. After the October 5th, 2001 death from anthrax exposure of Sun photo editor Robert Stevens, the tabloid, the Sun, down in Florida, FBI Director Mueller was, quote, beaten up, end quote, figure of speech, during President Bush's morning intelligence briefing for not producing proof that the killer spores were the handiwork of Osama bin Laden. That's according to a former aide that the New York Daily News chooses not to name. But a senior retired FBI official told the Daily News, quote, they really wanted to blame somebody in the Middle East. And October 15th, 10 days later, Bush said there may be some possible link to bin Laden, adding, I wouldn't put it past him. I wouldn't put it past him. Jesus Christ. But by then, the FBI already knew anthrax spilling out of letters addressed to media outlets and to U.S. senators was a military strain of the bioweapon. There's more. I got to talk about this a little bit when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Or will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul.
First of all, I don't have anthrax.
Yeah. Well, that's the country's loss. 26 before the hour. All of a sudden, Tom Daschle is back in the news, as Prairie 2 writes. Former Senate Majority Leader Daschle is making the rounds of all the news shows and expressing his lack of confidence in the FBI. Not a surprising attitude, since the Bush crime family tried to kill him, and the FBI keeps covering up that fact. More and more information keeps leaking out of the anthrax investigation. Seems the FBI didn't even have a report to take to the grand jury, let alone an indictment. But the Department of Justice intends to close the case anyway. The people who worked with Dr. Bruce Ivins for 30 years at the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases are expressing utter disbelief in the FBI's claims, not just because the family man and Red Cross volunteer didn't show any of the tendencies the FBI claims he had, but that they didn't keep powdered anthrax. The FBI claims to have the ability to, quote, so-called fingerprint of the anthrax toxin, and therefore had irrefutable proof that it was Dr. Ivins. The folks down at the Army Medical Research Institute say they don't even have that technology, and they are the people who developed that sort of thing. The FBI is not really in the research and development business, since a new technology has to be accepted by the science community before it will be accepted in court. And the science community for that sort of thing is found down at the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute. And the psychologist the FBI describes in press releases as Dr. Ivan's therapist turns out to be working for them and not for the late doctor. He supposedly left her a threatening voicemail. We're still waiting to hear, but it will probably go something like this. I'm coming to you with very bad germs. The letters with the anthrax were written in a similar style, prompting the FBI expert, now retired, to tell them they were looking for a senior U.S. military officer or a CIA agent. The right-wing killers can't keep it straight that the propaganda that they spout is different from reality, and it comes through in their writing. Notice he didn't say they were looking for middle-aged scientists with an IQ too high to measure. The writing style would be different. The FBI's contention that Dr. Ivins stood to gain from the need for an anthrax vaccine is also bunk, in that all he could hope to get is a $15,000 bonus that he would have had to have share. But it's a good motive just the same if you follow the money. Cronies of Dick Cheney got a huge no-big contract for a vaccine that doesn't work very well, but they happen to have... that they just happen to have ready to go when the crisis hit. The anthrax crisis. Amazing foresight on their part. But then Dick Cheney always hangs around with the best and the brightest. Well, all of a sudden, and I think Glenn Greenwald probably has the best thing out on the internet right now about this whole anthrax thing. We have a link at MikeMalloy.com in our topics for this evening that will take you right to Glenn Greenwald's article at Salon.com. So check it out. But you know and I know that this is a scam, right? You do know that, don't you? Huh? You don't really believe that this suicide is anything other than bull hockey. Do you? Nah. All right, what else? Oh, the we didn't get to this. This was last week. The White House, the Bush crime family. I like it when they say the White House does this or the White House does that. Who put that in the? Is that in the AP style book or the New York Times style book? You know, why not say members of the Bush administration or the Kennedy administration or the John, you know, whatever the administration is? But no, they call it the White House. The White House on Thursday unveiled an overhaul of intelligence powers that concentrates power in the NID, the National Intelligence Director. And, of course, it drew immediate criticism from the stalwart protectors of liberty in Congress, because they didn't get consulted on the changes. This is a question kind of off the cuff. When are the Democrats and the Republicans in the House and the Senate going to realize that they are totally irrelevant, completely irrelevant? They have been made irrelevant completely and totally in the administration of the Bush crime family. And McCain or Obama, neither, is going to do anything to change all that. Congress is now irrelevant. Congress is irrelevant. Remember that. Well, you knew that. What happened was Bush approved revising a 1981 executive order. And the way it's being reported, Bush approved revising a 1981 executive order to better define the various intelligence agencies' roles and responsibilities, as well as take into account a 2004 law that created the Director of National Intelligence job. You remember that law in 2004, Director of National Intelligence. Somebody, God help us, to protect us, right? The efforts to shore up U.S. intelligence activities follow numerous lapses, including failing to detect the September 11 attacks ahead of time. You see how it's a win-win situation for the Bush crime family? Huh? They get their Pearl Harbor moment thanks to their clear-eyed planning, either making that event occur or allowing it to occur. It makes no difference to me. Murder is murder. So they get the benefit of consolidating executive power as a result of the fear and loathing and terror that we all felt on September 12th. But in addition, the second win is... The second win is a consolidation of power, a changing of everything, a complete bypassing of the Constitution, international law, Geneva Conventions, everything, as a result of that terrible, terrible attack on us on September 11, 2001. Even after the position was created, the Director of National Intelligence, the intelligence community has not been without controversy. Last December, it issued a report that questioned Iran's nuclear weapons ambitions despite concerns by administration hardliners. That would be Cheney. What that means is, remember that report? 15 or 16 national intelligence agencies said, wait a minute, they stopped this 5 years ago. There's nothing happening there in terms of nuclear weapons. There's a nuclear energy program going on, and they are using centrifuges to manufacture this and that and the other thing, or to extract this and that and the other thing. But it's not a weapons program, although it could be used as one, but it's not. But it could be. But it's not, you know, it really isn't. No, 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 no. White House spokesman Dana Perino said last Thursday, quote, today's actions will help create a more effective intelligence community capable of providing the president and his advisors with information necessary to defend our national and homeland security. But even Republicans are a little bit upset about what happened. Pete Hoekstra, the top Republican on the House Intelligence Committee, said, quote, given the impact that this order will have on America's intelligence community and this committee's responsibility to oversee intelligence activities, this cannot be seen as anything other than an attempt to undercut congressional oversight, end quote. Oh, Pete, come on. It's not an attempt. Jesus Christ, it's a frontal assault. What are you talking about, attempt? And they won. Come on, give it up. Wave your white flag. You're a Republican. You know how to do that. Come on. Representative Sylvester Reyes, a Texas Democrat who heads the Intelligence Committee, said, we were only shown the document after it was complete and on its way to the president for his signature. So what does that mean? So what? Hello? So what? Under the order, Mike McConnell, who is now the DNI, will gain primary responsibility for developing relationships with foreign intelligence agencies that had been traditionally handled by the CIA. So now it goes to someone just one click beneath the President of the United States. Forget the CIA, forget the State Department, forget everything. This is the new American century. This is what we now do. The DNI will assume a larger role in hiring and firing agency heads. Congressional approval? Please. And overseeing the acquisition of new spy satellites. And other toys, very expensive toys. Dana Perino says, though, the executive order maintains and strengthens existing protection for American civil liberties and privacy rights. Let me slow that down. The executive order maintains and strengthens existing protections for American civil liberties and privacy rights. They stand there and say that sort of thing. They actually, they send too much cappuccino Perino out to stand there and say, well, now this new order strengthens existing protections for American civil liberties and privacy rights when it does exactly the same. Freedom is slavery. War is peace. Perino is crazy. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
I've got no friends to fear. I've got no problems, no pride to bear. If you can find me, come get me out of here. This is my private place. Everything is neat and clean. The skeletons are hidden in the closet. This is my private place. Come get me out of here.
That people send ugly things to the mail. There's evil in the world, but we can overcome evil. We're good.
Regarding the revamping of intelligence laws, this from Ward in Japan. Mike, Bush's adjustment to Presidential Order 12333 regarding the intelligence community and putting all of it under the Director of National Intelligence is very scary and bad news for the rights of everyone everywhere in the world, as well as for anyone who advocates peace. Prior to Bush's move, the Director of Central Intelligence, the DCI, was the one who coordinated intelligence. He was appointed by the President, confirmed by the Senate. But the CIA is an agency and so has some autonomy. The Director of National Intelligence, however, was created by Bush and his lapdog. Now he is in ultimate control of the information that comes from all, 16 intelligence entities of the U.S. government, plus shared intelligence from other countries. I urge you to go to the website for the National Intelligence Agency, which is dni.gov. Download the 28-page paper it features called Vision 2015. In it, you will find some astonishing statements. They no longer view the purpose on the intelligence agents of the intelligence agencies as providing the accurate information that's needed to protect the nation. Rather, the administration is referred to as the customer, and the purpose is to collect the information that the customer needs to reach its stated goal. They call it customer-driven intelligence. Quote from Vision 2015, page 10, quote, rather than asking customers, what are your intelligence priorities, we will engage them with, quote, what do you wish to accomplish, end quote. Intelligence support, therefore, to customers will become more of a relationship than an event. What does that suggest, Ward writes? It suggests to me that there will be no more unwelcome surprises from the intelligence community, such as the CIA's leaks about Iran and the National Intelligence Estimate that said Iran no longer had a nuclear weapons program, which possibly thwarted an earlier plan to attack Iran. No. Now all intelligence will be filtered by Bush's lapdog, who will provide only what supports that which the customer wants to accomplish. If the Cheney Bush junta says, we want to attack Iran, so give us the intelligence to support that, then DNI Mike McConnell, the former head of the National Security Agency, will happily supply what the customer wants. So much for peace. I leave it to you to imagine what this will mean with regards to spying on Americans. They are touting it as a way to help ensure our privacy rights, but offer no example as to how exactly it accomplishes that, other than to imply that by having an intelligence czar, abrogations of citizens' rights will not be tolerated. But isn't the opposite true? There will be no stopping them. The question, what is the truth, has been replaced by, What do you want the truth to be? There are other ominous signs in the Vision 2015 document, such as the comprehensive global nature of the intelligence gathering they envision. The graphics are reminiscent of the Pentagon's plans for the domination of space. Nothing in the whole damned world escapes their purview. For those who think that the Democrats will save us, there's a little quote. Here's a little quote from one of the authors of the bill which created the DNI, Representative Jane Harman, Democrat, Venice, California. Quote, I am sure that there was a lot of pushing and pulling to get this thing drafted, but obviously it had to be done. The DNI is firmly in charge now, and that's a good thing. End quote. As with Pelosi, we have to wonder, is she that dumb or that complicit? I think we know by now, don't we? So now the 16-tentacled octopus has a head and is answerable only to the president. And people think that having created this and all the other fascistic measures of the last 7 years, that they plan to leave power or leave the choice of a new administration to chance? I don't think so. Either the election will be rigged to place McCain in the office, or some other means, such as a state of emergency called by the decider, will ensure the continuity of the junta. Perhaps even if Obama is elected, he will prove compliant. His comments, his vote on FISA, and milieu of advisors more and more suggest just that. And then, as you ask more and more often, my friend, what will we do? Ward in Japan. Well, what will we do? Nothing? Yeah, this creation of the Director of National Intelligence and the fact that he now controls the flow of information. It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable. It is hysterically funny. It is funny because, you know why it's funny? Because it's just a theatrical production. We are watching a play. That's all. You're aware of that, right? We have front row seats to this production. We were given a handbill when we walked in and found our seats. But unexpectedly, what was written on the handbill has disappeared. Apparently, it was written in some sort of trickster-style invisible ink. I can't even see anymore who the cast of characters is. Can you on yours? I can't see it anymore on mine. But we're watching a play, and if I remember, when I first walked in here and sat down, the handbill said that there were an endless series of acts, that this was not your typical one, two, or three-act play, that, in fact, the length of the play was solely determined by the audience response. And oddly, it's kind of an inverted situation. The less response from the audience, the more the play will continue. It's kind of weird. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
story in your eyes. It's been shining down.
Welcome back. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. We have a moment with Bob coming up in just a few minutes. New York Times had an interesting editorial today titled Last Minute Mischief for Labor. Another clear example of what we've talked about in this program for, 7 years now, about the utter destruction of every single cabinet position by the Bush crime family, the utter destruction and corruption, mostly, of every single regulatory agency, the turning of these regulatory agency heads into nothing more than paid whores, no offense to sex workers, who operate for the industry that they're supposed to regulate. I think the one that really floored me the most was Gail... Secretary of the Interior, Gail Norton, who had in a previous lifetime been a chief lobbyist for the lead industry, a lobbyist for the lead industry, right? The Department of Labor has done nothing. According to New York Times, in 7 years, it has issued one major rule change protecting workers. Allegedly against a chemical toxin, and that was forced on it by court order. And now, the Labor Department, you know, I'm so old, I remember when the Department of Labor was all about protecting workers' rights and making sure that workers had a fair shake in terms of the environment in which they worked and the pay that they got and no discrimination and this and that and the other thing and the right to organize a union, if that's what the workers decided, or at least the right to sit down and talk about it. That's how I remember the labor, the Labor Department. Is Elaine Chao still the Secretary of Labor? Is there a new one, or is she still, isn't she Mitch McConnell's old lady? I don't mean that to sound as a sexist statement, but actually it's Mitch McConnell's beard. Mitch McConnell is about as interested in Elaine Chao as I'm interested in having sex with a cactus plant. But anyway, I digress. I guess Elaine Chao still is. But the Labor Department, according to the New York Times, has now taken a giant step beyond its 7-year-long benign neglect. Don't you love that term? That was isn't that what Reagan suggested where it concerned racial equality in this country or the rights of black folk to have equal rights? And he suggested that all this nonsense through the court stop and we enter into a period of benign neglect. Was that Reagan? Doesn't really matter. I don't care. It was a Republican. I know that. Anyway, political appointees at the Labor Department have been discovered in a rush to they're in a rush to duck public disclosure and to put into place a pro-industry rule making it more difficult to limit workers' exposure to poisonous chemicals. Do you understand that? The people working for the Bush crime family's Labor Department want to make it more difficult for workers to avoid working in an environment where they're going to be poisoned. In other words, increase the poison. These son of a bitches. See, I believe to some extent where it concerns political justice, I believe in firing squads and the gallows. I really do. I just do. And how does that square with my no capital punishment? I guess the difference between criminal law and political crimes, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, this latest bit of garbage by Bush ideologues was uncovered by the Washington Post after a very cryptic 9-word reference appeared on a White House website. It turned out to be a regressive proposal to weaken existing toxin risk standards by putting an additional round of opportunities to challenge the rules. You know how they always say, well, we've got to do a further study. In the meantime, people get sick and die. We got to do further studies. You know. The new proposal would also water down the current standard of measuring accumulated toxin risk across a work career of 45 years, just like asbestos or some of the other. That's the one that we're all familiar with. Oh, it's safe, no problem. And 35, 40 years after you're exposed to it, you die a very, very difficult death. Federal regulations require that the public should have been alerted twice annually about planned changes in the works at the Labor Department. Instead, it's all done in the shadows now. The Times says, it's pathetic to discover President Bush's team investing its closing months on one more sop to industry. It signals that the regulatory mess facing the next president continues to grow, since the stealth games at the Department of Labor are likely being duplicated in other agencies. And then it says some more, but, the reason I quote the Times so much, it just fascinates. I love the New York Times. It usually publishes some really good stuff, some really shocking stories, some really exposés. But on the editorial page, it can be just funny as hell. Unintended comedic material to me, the stuff that's really unintended, is the stuff that I find the funniest, especially when it comes from the editorial board of the New York Times, a board that is obviously much brighter than I am about these issues. So if I can find humor in what they write, it kind of makes my day. You know, if I can sit there and drinking my Super Beans coffee and just go, what? What'd they say? What? What was that little bit right there? What did I do? Did I throw it away? What's that little bit? Oh, about suggesting, New York Times editorial board suggesting, oh, yeah, since the stealth games at the Labor Department are likely being duplicated in other agencies, likely? Oh, my God. Are they that stupid or that complicit? Oops, we already asked that question tonight. That was about Jane Harmon. Incredible, isn't it? Hey, yo, New York Times, are you serious? Likely being duplicated at other agencies? Please, stop. You're cracking me up. The Department of Labor, if they want a case, I can point them towards one, a slaughterhouse in Postville, Iowa. Huh? They could go there. A videotape by an animal rights group shows workers pulling the windpipes out of living cows. A woman with a deformed hand tells a reporter of cutting meat for 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, for wages that labor experts call the lowest in the industry. This year, federal investigators amass evidence of rampant illegal hiring at the plant, which has been called a kosher jungle. This was an editorial in the Times, too. The conditions at the agriprocessors plant cry out for the cautious and deliberate application of justice. Wow, man. But what happened to the workers there, hundreds of them, because they had false identity papers? They were bused from Little Pottsville to the National Cattle Congress Fairgrounds in Waterloo, Iowa. The defendants, mostly immigrants from Guatemala, are not charged with the usual administrative violations, but with aggravated identity theft, which is a very serious crime. They're offered a deal. They can admit their guilt to lesser charges, waive their rights, including the right to a hearing before an immigration judge, spend 5 months in prison, then be deported. Or they can spend 6 months or more in jail without bail while awaiting a trial date, face a minimum 2-year prison sentence, and be deported anyway. So 300 people agreed to the 5 months after being hustled through the mass hearings with one lawyer for 17 people, each having about 30 minutes of consultation per client. The deal is a brutal legal vice, but the immigrants accept it as the quickest way back to their spouses and children, hundreds of whom are cowering in a Catholic church, afraid to leave and not knowing how they will survive. I'm talking about a scene in the goddamn United Goddamn States. And this really infuriates me, but I digress. The workers are then scattered to federal lockups around the country. Many families still do not know where they are. And the plant's owners? They walk freely. The once silent workers of agri-processors now tell of a host of abusive practices, of rampant injuries and of exhausted children as young as 13, wielding knives on the killing floor. A young man said in an affidavit he started at 16 in 17-hour shifts, 6 days a week. He said, quote, "I was very sad and I felt like I was a slave," end quote. Instead of receiving medical treatment as defendants, who also are victims, the workers have been branded as the kind of predator who steals identities to empty bank accounts. That didn't happen. I'll give you a little more of this when we come back. All of a sudden, now, I'm really pissed off.
Gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
22 past the hour, so the destruction of the Labor Department, the corruption of the Labor Department, as weirdly pointed out in the New York Times, and oh gosh, you may have it again. If ever the Labor Department needed to step in someplace, it was at the slaughterhouse in Postville, Iowa. So-called kosher jungle. And everybody screamed, all the right-wing pundits, especially the thugs on television, screamed that the workers were the kind of predator who steals identities to empty bank accounts. You know, they were working under false papers. Accounts from Postville suggest that that's not remotely what they were. One of the Spanish language interpreters for many of the workers who had to show up in court said, quote, "Most of the clients we interviewed did not even know what a Social Security number was or what purpose it served. The worker simply had the papers filled out for him at the plant since he could not read or write Spanish, let alone English." So the supervisors, the owners would sit the Guatemalans down, the people who were here illegally, fill in the documents for them, the ones that would protect the employers. The documents that fraudulently stated that the workers were here legally and had the correct papers. The workers, as this interpreter pointed out, most of them couldn't even write Spanish. English? Forget that. New York Times, again, says the harsh prosecution at Postville is an odd and cruel shift for the Bush administration, which for years had voiced compassion for exploited workers and insisted that immigration had to be fixed comprehensively or not at all. Well, yeah. Why don't you add why, New York Times? It was because there were elections to be influenced, Latino voters to be made to think that the Bush administration was interested in them. That's why. The Times says, now it, the Bush crime family, has abandoned mercy and proportionality. What? Oh, well, let me continue. It has devised new and harsher traps, as in Postville, to prosecute the weak and the poor. It has increased the fear and desperation of workers who are irresistible to bottom-feeding businesses precisely because they are fearful and desperate. By treating illegal low-wage workers as a de facto criminal class, the government, the Bush crime family, is trying to inflate the menace they pose to a level that justifies its rabid efforts to capture and punish them. This is a national disgrace. Well, yeah, but, you know, first of all, they're just low-rent workers. They are immigrants, and we get to tag them illegal. They're illegal. because they came over here with the help of a coyote or just snuck across. They are illegal. Therefore, a place like Agri Processors Kosher Meatpacking Plant can do anything they want to these workers. Anything. And as far as a kosher meatpacking plant that was one of the main purveyors of that sort of meat product, not just in the United States, but in Europe and the Middle East, now reports are out of dirty, dangerous conditions at the plant that have accumulated for years. What will happen to this kosher meatpacking plant now? Will it go out of business? Maybe temporarily. What will happen to the owners? Nothing. Nothing. Because while the workers, through an interpreter, may say, well, when we got here, they sat us down at that table and said, here, sign this, sign that, sign this, sign that, and we didn't understand the language. We signed it anyway because we were desperate for jobs. That may be the story told to interpreters. But those are stories coming from people who are illegal to begin with. How about the owners? They are very legal. They're upstanding business people. They produce kosher meat products. What could be more upstanding than that? They will walk free. The workers are in prison. The Labor Department, the Bush Labor Department is a goddamn joke.
There's power in a union. Now the lessons of the past were all learned with workers' blood. The spikes of the bosses we must fight for. From the cities and the farmlands to trenches full of mud. Wars have always been the bosses wiser.
Primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Welcome back. 26 before the hour. Irish Dave reminds me it was Daniel Patrick Moynihan who came up with the benign neglect phrase back during the era of Tricky Dick. Hey, guess what time it is? It's time once again for A Moment with Bob. Hey, Mike, after reading as much news as I could stomach this morning, I immediately thought of Rod Serling, the guy who understood better than most the banal surrealism of Main Street America. Machiavelli's The Prince, the guidebook on getting and preserving power, and the Fire Sign Theater's I Think We're All Bozos on This Bus. So what is an old TV show, the writings of a 481-year-old dead guy, and a comedy album from 1971 have anything to do with August 2008? Well, Rod Serling set the stage. You're traveling through another dimension, beyond that which is known to man. You're moving into a land between light and shadow, between science and superstition. That's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, the Twilight Zone. Machiavelli provided the techniques. If Karl Rove only read one book through his miserable lifetime, it's a safe assumption that one book would be Machiavelli's The Prince. Rove's entire political career is filled with one example after another of getting and maintaining power. From The End Justifies the Means as a Working Foundation to the most audacious accuse other people of crimes you have committed, all from the pages of Machiavelli's playbook. In 1986, when helping William Clements Jr., running for governor of Texas a second time, Rove bugged his own campaign office just before a crucial debate in the campaign and blamed the Democrats. Police and FBI investigated and discovered that the bug's battery was so small it would need to be changed every few hours. The investigation was dropped, but more importantly, Clements won. Rove has been proclaimed to be a, quote, genius, end quote. In reality, he's more like an idiot savant. His one and only talent is that he can lie. Most of us learned as children that it is wrong to tell a lie. Sociopaths like Rove somehow never learned that lesson. Rove has been handsomely rewarded for all his lies. In 1973, the sociopathic Karl Rove met the psychopathic George W. Bush. In different times, different circumstances, their story would have been told in lurid true crimes magazines. But with family connections and the deep pockets of the Republican Party, their history won't be found on magazine racks, but in a presidential library. So what's old Karl up to these days? Last March, as reported by Political.com, he's still a busy boy. Melman Rove boosts McCain campaign. John McCain is getting much more than President Bush's endorsement and fundraising help for his campaign. He's getting Bush's staff. Ken Melman, who ran Bush's 2004 campaign, is now serving as an unpaid outside advisor to the Arizona Republican. Karl Rove, the president's top political hand since his Texas days, recently gave money to McCain and soon after had a private conversation with the senator. A top McCain advisor said both Melman and Rove are now informally advising the campaign. Rove refused to detail his conversation with McCain. This explains, then, the tone of the current spate of McCain ads. John McCain pledged to run a respectful campaign and has proved that he doesn't know what those words mean in that order. The ads are not filled with spin, distortions, or hyperbole. They are simply lies. One claim that Obama is playing the race card, completely untrue. When the McCain campaign played that same card in an ad back in April. Thank you, Machiavelli. Accuse your opponent of doing what you have already done. It's amazing people still fall for that. But McCain's latest attack ad is completely off the scale. Politicians have always used code words that sound innocent enough but speak volumes to a target audience. You can't flat out use the N-word, but you can certainly talk of states' rights down in the South, and those voters know what you're talking about. In order to completely get a lock on the crazy evangelical vote, McCain's newest spot portrays Barack Obama as the Antichrist. You really can't get much crazier than that. A quote from the Book of Psalms, an insinuation from Revelation, and Charlton Goddamn Heston himself as Moses will drive those Bible-thumping mouth-breathers straight to the voting booth, scared witless that Satan's minion is coming to town, and he's black! If you don't think that McCain attack ads don't make much difference, Google Obama Antichrist, and over a million pages show up. And the Rasmussen Report's daily presidential tracking poll for Monday, August 4th, show the race for the White House is tied, with Barack Obama and John McCain each attracting 44% of the vote. However, when leaners are included, it's McCain 47% and Obama 46%. Karl Rove's slimy fingerprints are all over the McCain ads, and if you can believe the polls, they're working. I take back that you really can't get much crazier than that statement. We've got 3 long months to go until Election Day. I don't know where McCain can go after the Obama as Antichrist ad runs its course, but I'm sure Karl will think of a lie so cynically evil, the mainstream media will talk about it endlessly for days, which is what Rove wants in the first place. So, Mike, if the Rove tactic of accusing Democrats of a flaw that the Rove Republicans possess, and we all know that Barack Obama is not the Antichrist, then does that mean that Karl Rove could be... Oh, never mind. Oh, I almost forgot. How does the Fire Sign Theater fit into all this? I believe that if one follows current events and attempts to dig beneath the veneer of mainstream media, there is... certain repercussions. As the Honorable Chester Cadaver from I Think We're All Bozos on This Bus explains, quote, sure, understanding today's complex world of the future is a little like having bees live in your head. But there they are. I know exactly what that feels like. So, go ahead, squeeze the wheeze. We're all bozos on this bus. Regards, Bob. Another Moment with Bob, brought to you by your friends at Offshore Drilling. Sure, understanding today's complex world of the future is a little like having bees live in your head.
Oh, Jesus, God.
For Bob Alexander, if you like Bob's work, go to my website, MikeMolloy.com, and you can find these posted every time we read one on the air. It will be there that evening. And if you really want to have some fun, go to superbeans.com. Where you will also find the crazed ramblings of Bob Alexander and some incredibly good coffee. Does he still advertise with us? Does he? He still does? That's cool. I like that. We started drinking Super Beans coffee, I don't know what, a year ago, 6, 8 months ago, something like that. My life has not been the same since. Is it around Christmas? Is that all? Seems like I've never drunk anything but Super Beans coffee. It is wonderful.
Oh, you're just saying that because, you know, he writes stuff for your program.
Well, get some of superbeans.com coffee and you decide, all right? It is. It's amazing stuff. Where are we? Oh, my God. The program's almost over. Let's do a phone call here. Theodore is calling from California, listening on the internet. Hey, Theodore.
Hey, Matt, what's up, Mike?
You are. May I call you Ted?
Of course.
Okay, hi, Ted.
I was just listening to you as usual, and my girlfriend often asked me, like, what are you doing outside? And I'm sitting in my car listening to Mike Molloy, of course, you know. Wait,
you can't sit inside and listen?
Oh, no, I do podcasts, or, you know, on the computer as well, but, uh-huh. Like, it's like, she's busy watching TV or something.
Oh, I see.
Blah, blah,
okay.
Blah.
Yeah.
Love the Moody Blues, man. My brother had, like, it was like a greatest hits album. It was like a two-album thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Fourth side. You know, the song that you play, I can't remember the name of it, but it was just a great side of that album, and I every time I hear it, it just sends chills down my spine.
Really?
Yeah, it's great. Great band. Great band.
I think it's the title of the one we play is Music to the Story in Your Eyes.
Right.
The Story in Your Eyes. I think it's called The Story in Your Eyes.
The opening track was I'm Just a Singer in a Rock and Roll Band.
Yeah, yeah.
To, For My Lady, which, and then, of uh-huh. course, it, what is the Knights in White Satin, and
right.
ended up with that, yeah. But I find it funny you're talking about these corporations, how, like, the big wigs get off. And if you, like, go to Adolf Hitler quotes, like, if you tell a big enough lie and tell it frequently enough, it will be believed.
That's
if
right.
you commit a big enough crime and do it frequently enough, it will be allowed.
Yeah.
And then there's another quote, too. Make the lie big, make it simple, keep saying it, eventually they will believe it. Make the crime big, make it simple, keep saying it, and eventually they will believe it. And that's what the Bush crime family's been doing. I'm sick of these bastards. And love listening to your show because you freaking call them out on every corner. And there's going to be repercussions. I'm just waiting for Cheney to have a freaking heart attack.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, to be to his grave. And there's a nice moat around his place in hell. That's all I know.
Yeah, I would imagine someplace, even for atheists like me, there are certain constructs that religious people would identify as hells. And some of these really, really, really massively evil people who live on this planet will eventually wind up there. Hey, Theodore, listen, I'm calling again sometime. This is the first time you've called, right?
Yeah, I've never gotten through to you before, but I'll call you again.
All right. Well, I'm glad you called.
And I'm not trying to be so negative, but I'm just trying to call these people out, that's all.
I hear you loud and clear. Thanks, Theodore. Take care. We'll talk again. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Molloy.
Standing up for what he believes in. Maxine's hurting.
It's about 8 before the hour. Thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, who engineered the program, answered your calls, Ben Birch, podcast manager, Billy Foster, our technical director, and our creative staff, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wiff, Sharon Gordy, and Catherine Bay, who is the executive producer. Let's do a couple more phone calls here before we all turn into pumpkins. Jim is calling from Atwater Village, California. Jim, welcome to the program.
How you doing, man?
I'm all right. How are you?
Well, to begin with, I wanted to compliment you on the music. It's some of the best I've heard over the last 3 or 4 days. It's quite
awesome. Thank you. Appreciate it.
And also, I must say, you're the bravest man on radio. It really takes courage to even call you because, you know, FISA and
Pizza.
But you're a person who yells well on the radio, and I was wondering if you could start yelling about the no autopsy of the person who put the anthrax out that ABC alluded came from Iraq, which was one of the reasons we attacked Iraq, I would suppose. But
go ahead.
Well, you know there was no autopsy. You know, on TV we see CSI, we see how they can detect a needle mark. Have you ever taken a codeine 3? You're from Toledo. I'm from South Detroit, and I used to go there to drink, but OD on codeine 3s, please.
Well, yeah, sure, it can be done. It can be done. But I'll tell you.
How about an autopsy?
I'm sorry?
How about an autopsy?
Well, yeah, and I'll tell you, the entire anthrax story, Jim, ever since it occurred, and then the subsequent hounding of what was his name, Hatfield, the first guy the FBI tried to drive to either insanity or suicide, and now this has been going on for 7 years. I think we all know, just like the 9/11 attacks, this was somehow, in some degree, in some manner, in some way, an inside job. There's no question about that. Not in my mind. And no, I don't wear a tinfoil hat. I consider myself to be as rational as the next person. Wait a minute. Let me think about that for a second. I might be condemning myself there. But no, seriously, I do. And as far as the anthrax story, when you look at who is targeted, really look at who is targeted. And then look at how this crappy-ass investigation, quote-quote, has gone for the past 7 years. You can only come to one conclusion. It's another Karl Rove, Dick Cheney operation. Everything vile and filthy and full of worms and hate and mold and death and destruction that has occurred in this country or outside this country for 7 years somehow works its way back to the psychopathic hands of Dick Cheney and the entire Bush crime family. Everything, every single event in which the United States is even remotely involved, is a Bush crime family operation. These people are I don't know. They were dropped here out of the ass of some overlord flying by who felt the urge to do whatever he had to do. Maybe some sort of interstellar Metamucil hit him just at the right moment. He flew over Earth, and out comes these people. That's a little graphic, isn't it? But I don't care. That's how I feel. That's exactly what I feel they are. They are subhuman. They are anti-human. They are non-human. They are creatures of the dark. They are creatures from that part of the human unconscious that is full of spiders and crabs and things that eat dead stuff and just on and on and on. I am hoping that someday an enterprising Hollywood, probably a B-movie director, you know, somebody who doesn't do the A-list stuff like the new Batman movie, but some B-movie director will produce a film, a horror film, about George W. Bush and the Bush crime family. Something articulate. I'm not talking about Night of the Living Dead. I'm not talking about a George Romero show, a movie. I'm talking about something that just is just close enough to the truth to send audiences screaming out of the theaters, you know, gouging their eyes out with sharp objects after they've seen the first 45 minutes of it. I mean, that kind of a film. Because you know why? I'll tell you why. Because that's what we have been watching in this country for the past 7 years. We've been watching that movie. Or did I refer to it as a play? Hell, I don't know. It really doesn't make any difference. I do know that the one unifying source of the success of this administration has been our willing suspension of disbelief, up to and including wars, suicides, torture, events that would make most of us weep in the night. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M Radio.